Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Text 9. Tasmin kute hite naste. 10. Ten is on the board. All right. Ten is on the board. Tavadyata bhuvam yuyang. Brahma shatra samaditam. Sudaya dram tapo yagya. Swadhyaya vratadanana Tavadyata bhuvam yuyang Brahma chatra samaditam Sudaya dham tapo yagya Swadhyaya vratadanana Tavadyata bhuvam yuyang Brahma shatra samaditam Sudaya dvam tapu yagya Swadhyaya vratadanina Vaishnavis, but as long as I am engaged in the matter of killing Vishnu, yata, go, bhuvam, to the planet Earth, yuyam, all of you, brahmachatra, of the brahmanas and kshatriyas, samedhitam, made prosperous by the activities. Brahminical culture and Vedic government. Sudaya dham, just destroy. Tapa, the performers of austerities. Yagya, sacrifices. Swadhyaya, study of Vedic knowledge. Vrata, the regulative vows, dhanina, and those giving charity. I will read the translation and purport for text 9, and the purport for text 10 is rather long, so I'll read the verse of text 10, and perhaps tomorrow's speaker might choose to go deep into the purport of text 10 since it's quite lengthy. Text 9. When the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, its branches and twigs automatically dry up. Similarly, when I have killed this diplomatic Vishnu, the demigods, for whom Lord Vishnu is the life and soul, will lose the source of their life and wither away. Purport. The difference between the demigods and the demons is here explained. The demigods always follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the demons simply plan to disturb or kill him. Nevertheless, sometimes the demons very much appreciate the full dependence of the demigods upon the mercy of the Lord. This is indirect glorification of the demigods by the demons. Translation for text 10, since we did chant that. While I am engaged in the business of killing Lord Vishnu, go down to the planet Earth, which is flourishing due to Brahminical culture and a Kshatriya government. These people engage in austerity, sacrifice, Vedic study, regular vows, and charity. Destroy all the people thus engaged. Om Gana Chimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Life is all about making plans. The demons have their plans. The devotees have their plans. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna famously asks, Sarva Dharman Prichajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Abandoning all varieties of dharma can also be paraphrased as abandoning all plan making and accept Krishna's plan. Material existence is all about an idea, a plan that conditioned souls have in their mind. They see opportunity, they see possibilities, and therefore they make plans. When Krishna says abandon all varieties of religion, this includes a request for us to shut down our plan-making factory. And that feels tough to us often. Shut down our plan-making factory and accept Krishna's plan. Hiranyakashipu is setting a plan into action. His demoniac associates will humbly take Hiranyakashipu's order of devastation upon their heads and proceed to execute it. What is the root of this plan? Yudhisthira Maharaj inquired from Narada Muni, why such enmity between Hiranyakashipu and his own son Prahlad? What's the cause of this? Narada Muni is explaining that because Vishnu killed Hiranyakashipu's brother Hiranyaksha, therefore, by Prahlad's siding with Vishnu, he became such an enemy to his own father that his father wanted to kill him. So at the root of this situation, we have extreme envy. And this envy will be more developed in the present chapter, the verses. Hiranyakashipu had a vision for peace for himself. He's enraged that Vishnu has killed his brother. He's vowing that I will personally kill Vishnu and destroy the spiritual world. He's staring up into the sky as if he can see Vaikuntha. He's vowing, I'm going to finish off Vaikuntha. What is his peace formula? When I cut off the head of Vishnu and the blood of Vishnu starts to run, this will please my brother and I shall also be pleased. I'll be pacified. Our dilemma in material existence is that we always think that by our fulfilling material desires, we'll be pacified. We have this notion in our mind, and it seems quite clear at times. All I have to do is seek my own happiness, seek my own pleasure, and then I will be peaceful. Those who don't get in the way of my seeking my own happiness, they are friends, even lovers. Those who interfere or impede my quest for happiness, they are known as enemies. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that actually, love in the material world means, look, you don't interfere with my sense gratification. I love you. You're supportive of my sense gratification. I love you. This is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement. Hiranyakashipu not only had a plan for his achieving peace, but he also had a plan how to destroy the earth. This is his version of watering the tree at the root and all the branches blossom. You know that verse in the fourth canto. We often quote, by giving the food to the stomach, the whole body becomes energized. By watering the tree at the root, all the branches blossom. Similarly, by serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is taken care of. Hiranyakashipu had his own version of that. Uproot. Pull out the root. And then the tree is finished. His main focus, his main strategy was on killing Vishnu. At the same time, however, he had a secondary strategy. And he's employing his demoniac associates to do the secondary strategy, which is go to earth and destroy all principles of spiritually progressive civilization, especially Brahminical culture and genuine Kshatriya government. He particularly fingered those two components. What Hiranyakashipu is trying to do is destroy the traditional bases of human happiness. His strategy will go even to the extent of environmental terrorism. His associates are going to burn cities, farms, kill brahmanas, kill cows. The devastation was so great that even the demigods came to earth to invisibly to see what is this calamity and what are we going to do. We spoke about how Hiranyakashipu's main plan is he himself would kill Vishnu, but he also, as we said, had a secondary plan. By destroying Brahminical culture, he felt the demigods would be weakened. And by the demigods being weakened, automatically there'd be a domino effect, and that would also get back at Vishnu. So he had a main plan and he had a secondary plan. Amidst all this mayhem, and we shouldn't take this mayhem as something outlandish that, well, at least human beings today aren't this bad. Just consider. There's one particular nation in this world, I won't mention its name, although I happen to have taken birth there. It has proposed that for the upliftment of peace and the stability of the world over the course of the next 30 years, $1 trillion should be spent upgrading the nuclear arsenal. $1 trillion. All for the sake of peace. Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita that this is demoniac. He declares straightforwardly, these weapons are not for peace. You have to think twice about that, because perhaps we've been so brainwashed. The nuclear weapons are there to maintain world peace, therefore the governments have to spend on this. So Srila Prabhupada assures us they're not meant for peace. They're actually the result of envy against living entities. I live, you die. And there is some strange, perverse, envious satisfaction in having the ability to annihilate other creatures. Envy has a different meaning in the Shastra besides just one-on-one enviousness, which is bad enough. You are rising up. I can't tolerate that. Your rise is, whether it's material or spiritual, we've got to do something to cut you down. Yes, that is envy. But there's also the envy manifesting on a broad scale. So Srila Prabhupada instructs us in Srimad Bhagavatam that the demoniac governments actually are waging envy on a mass scale by making life practically impossible for spiritual development. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about those envious of the super soul within, so much so that they torture their own bodies. You have to really think about this to catch the perversion. We can perhaps see this more clearly in Kamsa's response once he took shelter of his demoniac advisors. You know that after Kamsa in the prison cell saw Durga Devi, he begged forgiveness so pathetically from Vasudeva and Devaki. Look, destiny, I'm not actually the killer. It is destiny that brings everyone their fate. And Vasudeva and Devaki, they actually forgave him for killing so many of their babies. Sincerely, they forgave him. At the same time, we must remember, they're Kshatriyas. So they're thinking, yes, we wholeheartedly forgive you, but guess what? The eighth child's already been born. You're a dead man. Well, we forgive you. But at the same time, they genuinely 100% forgave him. It's hard for us to understand how both these streaks can be accommodated. So Kamsa left them and reported to his advisors. We heard yesterday in the class by His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Swami how Ravana had his advisors and he could give advice about taking advice. So Kamsa also had his advisors. And he presented the whole situation to them, what happened the day before. His advisors knew exactly what to do. It is plan-making time. It is time for strategic planning. All right, Kamsa. Here's what we see as the situation. The demigods are always afraid of you. We all know that. You've smashed the demigods before. And indeed, in other shastras, you have accounts of Kamsa defeating, at least temporarily, the demigods. The demigods, if they just hear you pull your bowstring, they're afraid. They can't face you in battle. They run away. Even though they're defeated by cowardice, you don't attack them. You're so righteous. You follow the principles of battle. When the foe is afraid, when the foe has dropped the weapon, you're not supposed to attack such an incompetent foe, and you follow those guidelines, Kamsa. But now is not the time for Dharma. Now is not the time for religious principles. In fact, Kamsa, because you followed religious principles and not killing the demigods when they were afraid, therefore we have the situation we have today, in which the demigods have increased in their strength. Therefore, the conclusion, the Siddhanta, is obvious. This is not the time for Dharma. Now is the time to just unleash massive destruction. How does that destruction begin? First, we obviously have to kill all children born around the 10 past days. But that strategy is not completely effective. Why? Because you're dealing with Vishnu. What is Vishnu's situation? He's hidden in everyone's heart. You know the famous analysis. We don't have to worry about Shiva. He's out in the forest. We don't have to worry about Brahma. He's performing severe austerities and penances. We actually don't have to worry ordinarily about Vishnu because he's buried in the hearts of everyone and can't get out. But we do want to kill him. The problem in killing Vishnu is his hiding in the heart. So therefore, we have to adopt another tactic. What is that other tactic? We kill the children. Then we kill all the cows because the cows provide ghee for yajna, and yajnas are what brahmanas do. So we kill the cows, and we also then persecute saintly persons, persecute the brahmanas, because they are responsible for the progressive elements of a spiritually focused civilization. By getting rid of the cows, the brahmanas, and all that brahmanas stand for, Vedic knowledge, austerity, penances, by getting rid of all that, then you've got Vishnu. Because Vishnu is all bound up with all this good stuff. So their strategy was a bit different from Hiranyakashipu's. Remember, Hiranyakashipu's strategy was, I'm going to kill Vishnu directly. Meanwhile, demons, you go destroy Brahmana, Kshatriya culture on the earth. And that's kind of a secondary strategy. But Kamsa's advisors, their strategy was, you can't get your hands on Vishnu. He's too slippery. He's hidden in the hearts. We've got to have a policy of attacking him from another direction. When we finish off Brahmana culture, the demigods are finished. And because all these are components of Vishnu's body, then Vishnu will be dead. Now we're thinking, these guys are quite extreme. Fortunately, in the world today, we have moderation, we have balance, we have equipoise. Actually, there hasn't been wholesale slaughter for, 70 years now? Therefore, certainly humanity has become progressive. 70 years ago or so, 50 million people died in a war. It hasn't happened yet. How great we are. But just consider this. There are 16,000 nuclear weapons in the world. 94% of them are in the hands of the Americans and Russians, all governments, of course, that we can trust. And growing are in Pakistan, and about 100 are in India. In 10 years, the number 3 nuclear power in the world will be a very trusted government. It'll be Pakistan. So you might say, all right, if there's a nuclear exchange between India and Pakistan, it won't affect the rest of the world, and it's just a local regional affair. No. Scientists have pointed out that if there are just 100 nuclear missiles launched, India launches 50, Pakistan launches 50, that is enough to bring about a climate change that recorded history has never seen. What's 100 when there are 16,000 of such weapons? Yet somehow or other human beings, they have a sense of peace, advancement, modernity. Then when we hear about Kamsa and Hiranyakashipu, we say, oh, how extreme, how grotesque. Such maha demons have their plans. Actually, everyone has a plan. How to enjoy, how to exploit the material world. The latest conception for materially progressive human beings is something called sustainable happiness. That means instead of the kind of endeavors for happiness that cause such obvious destruction, instead of that, you try for a happiness that doesn't negatively affect other people, the environment, or the coming generations. Young persons today, their future is going to be in a world that hasn't been recorded in the annals of history. Rising sea levels, disappearing species, fresh water supplies becoming scarce. The material conception of sustainable happiness is that it's not enough just to be materially happy your own way. Take into account other people. Take into account the environment. Take into account even other species of life. Understand interdependence. But that interdependence never goes as far as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, often it doesn't go to even other species. Yet this is considered progressive. Whenever you make an endeavor for happiness, think, how is this affecting other people? How is this affecting the environment? Just step in the right direction. But the point of Srimad Bhagavatam is that as long as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not in the equation, your efforts are futile. This may seem a bit severe. What's wrong with acting for progress even though such endeavors are disconnected? Can it be that such endeavors are illustrious and dignified on their own, even though we admit they have no connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Let's go at this issue from another angle, Atmatattva. Because later in this chapter, Hiranyakashipu is going to give his lamenting associates, they're lamenting over the death of Hiranyaksha, he's going to give them profound knowledge of Atmatattva. We're not the body, we're spirit soul. But he leaves it right there. He doesn't go any further. This presentation can be compared to Mayavad philosophy, which proclaims we all are spirit soul, but that's it. It doesn't go any further. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that the soul has no other propensity except to connect to the Supreme Soul. So once you talk about the soul, you must talk about the Supreme Soul. Material life means that that only propensity of the soul becomes dormant. Dormant, and the energy of the soul comes out in a perverted way, although the soul itself is never contaminated. disconnection from Krishna is the problem. We can't just erase that or push it to the side. How can there be sustainable happiness? How can there be genuine human progress when there is total disconnection from the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We have our plans, and Krishna has his plans. Everyone is making plans. There are demoniac plans. There are Leela plans. Sometimes in Krishna's pastimes, the Leela Shakti, his pastime energy, arranges things to such an extent that even Krishna is wondering, what's going on? We're not against plans. But as bhakti yogis, we always want to be aligned with Krishna's plan. That's Krishna's message to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. You shut down your plan-making factory, you take my master plan. Don't worry about any reactions. I'll take care of all that. One morning, actually the day before, Krishna decided, no breakfast at home. Let's have a picnic in the forest. The acharyas point out he made that plan the day before, and in the next morning he activated it by blowing on his bugle in such an inconceivably beautiful way. Hearing the sound of Krishna's bugle, countless cowherd boys amassed with countless calves. And they all headed to the forest. This was Krishna's plan. Balaram wanted to come, but Rohini actually forcibly kept him at home for purificatory rituals. Sporting in the forest, they came upon what would turn out to be Agasura. The cowherd boys discussed amongst themselves. They consulted with each other. They took the advice of senior cowherd boys. What is this here? This looks like a natural scenic spot in Vrindavan, meant for our pleasure. Others said, no, no. Some tried to run. This is a fierce snake with the bottom of his mouth on the ground, the top of his mouth high in the sky. They had a discussion. They assured the cowherd boys who were trying to run away, no, 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 let's come back and discuss. What was the conclusion? Actually, it is a big snake. And he wants to swallow us. What fun! They looked over and they saw Krishna. They saw Krishna's beautiful face and they knew exactly what to do. March right into the mouth of Agasura. Because Krishna's here. How can any harm come to us? Krishna's already killed so many demons. Krishna will take care of us. And this is a way to have a pleasure pastime. Another pastime of, if there's danger, Krishna will save us. So let's enjoy with Krishna. They marched into Agasura's mouth, clapping their hands, cheering loudly, showing we're courageous. We have no fear. They even brought their calves along with them. By clapping hands, the calves were moved along. Even though the calves were frightened, still, the boys were so enthusiastic. Let's go, into the mouth, come on. So Krishna's watching all this. He wants to stop it. That's his plan. He knows what's going on. But he's momentarily stunned. What to do here? The boys are inside. The calves are inside. The mouth of Agasura. how do I kill Agasura and at the same time protect the boys and calves? This is Krishna's ecstasy in problem solving. If he's Om Purnam, perfect and complete, he also has to relish the joy of solving problems. So his pastime energy arranges that. Krishna, here's a problem. And for your enjoyment, don't come up with a solution right away. This is the supreme enjoyer. This is perfect and complete enjoyment. So momentarily, Krishna is stymied. What to do? Can you say that Krishna, his will was thwarted? Such a sankalpa shakti, whatever he wants he gets, but he couldn't stop the cowherd boys. What's going on here? Krishna was trumped. His will was superseded by the cowherd boys' desires to have pastimes, because Krishna's conquered by his devotees. So Krishna's plan was superseded by his foremost plan, that he's always coming under the control of the pure love of his devotees. Everyone makes plans. We need to look at what our plan is. How does it harmonize, our personal life's plan? How does it harmonize with Krishna's pleasure? The non-devotees have their plan. They meet, they strategize. Mm-hmm. I've explained before, maybe some years ago in Mayapur, I've heard from world planners, both in the academic world, or part of think tanks for managing the future of the world. I've heard it from political leaders who will admit, yes, there is a world syndicate for trying to push things a certain way. They've even told me, if you're smart enough to figure this out, become one of us. Otherwise, just enjoy your television, enjoy your sports, and don't worry about it. Many of them have explained to me, these are academics from Harvard and Yale, that look, we used to be idealistic. We used to think that such syndicates were very unhealthy and wholesome for the future of the world. But this is the way it works. What can we do? And again, if you're actually smart enough to figure out what's going on, then just become one of the controllers, because someone has to be in control. So everyone is making their plans. The demons are making their plans. The devotees are making their plans. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Nityananda, Sripad, holy man, I've got a plan for you. Don't come to Jagannath Puri every year. Mm-hmm. I need someone to spread Krishna Bhakti in Bengal. Except for you, there's no one else who can do this task. You can do something even I can't do. You've already demonstrated that by not only saving the life of Jagai and Madhai, but you initiated their spiritual advancement. You, Nityananda Prabhu, can spread Krishna Bhakti far and wide to everyone. And what was Nityananda's response to this plan? I'm the body, you are the life. Both the body and the life are important, but of the two, the life is most important. I'll do whatever your inconceivable Shakti arranges for me to do. I'll follow your plan. Similarly, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says to Krishna, I'll follow your plan. My illusion is gone. Nashta moha smritir labdha. Karishye vachanam tava. I'll accept your plan. The ultimate solution to a devotee's dilemma of how to best please Krishna, what is the best way to serve Krishna, the ultimate solution is the guidance of the Lord in the heart. Hiranyakashipu was enraged that Vishnu had given up his role of equanimity as Paramatma. He accepted that there's Paramatma. He accepted that Vishnu is equal to all living entities, including the demons. But something happened. So remember, Kamsa's advisor's problem was, as they saw it, the Lord's hidden in the heart. Hiranyakashipu's problem, as he saw it, was that the Lord in the heart has become greedy for puja. And therefore, he's become inequitable. He's become unbalanced. And what is the proof of his lack of justice, even though generally he's equal? The proof is what you see right before you. He's become affected by the demigods just because they offer puja. And then what do you see? He took the form of an animal. Need I say anything more? He's obviously under the influence of the material energy. Not only did he take the form of an animal, but he took the form of a boar, the most lowest of creatures. It's obvious he's no longer fit to be Paramatma. Plan making is the essence of human life. What are the plans for? If we do not have a plan, how to go deeper in our spiritual life, which is an ongoing process of our lifetime career to increase our bhakti. If we don't have such a plan, we can be sure that the material energy, those who are under its influence, their plans will be wearing us down. There is no plateau in this world. This world is dynamic. The spiritual energy can uplift us, and the material energy can bring us down. Therefore, as individuals, individual devotees, if we're going to be able to survive the ravages of demoniac plan making, if we're going to avoid feeling secure, peaceful and stable in such a world, our only protection is to take shelter of Krishna's plan, and in our individual life try to continuously increase our spiritual potency. Our goal is that we can hear from Krishna what to do next, how to serve him best. Srila Prabhupada would plainly declare, when asked, how do you make decisions? He would say, Krishna tells me. Krishna tells me directly. Tesham sita yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam. Once we capture Krishna's attention due to our service, Krishna promises, I'll give you customized instructions. This is the actual solution to our dilemma of how to be spiritual in the material world, how to decide what gives Krishna the most pleasure, what gives Krishna the less pleasure. We must make plans, but our plan is to surrender to Krishna's plan. We want to shut down our plan-making factory, and we're begging Krishna, we want to accept your plan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I believe we're out of time, but if there's one question. Yes, Maharaj. We don't want to engage Krishna in our service, therefore we take all necessary precautions as far as possible. Only then we're entitled to depend on Krishna. But we have to use whatever intelligence we have, how to respond to situations in such a way that Krishna's purposes can be achieved. The cowherd boys, they're on another level. They know what they're doing. They're giving Krishna pleasure. There's not a trace of selfishness when the cowherd boys say, we're just going to march into that mouth. We're going to have a good time. They're thinking, Krishna's going to enjoy this. If we one day can approach that standard of purity, how wonderful our life will be. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.